As the head of the Little Red Feather Racing Syndicate, Billy Koch has always been an innovator. His latest project is crowdfunding, which could be the best way yet for racing to attract something it desperately needs, new owners, no matter how big or small. This is Bill Finley, and Koch is this week's guest on the Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, and we will join him right after this message from our sponsor, TaylorMade.
Family-owned and operated since 1976, TaylorMade has dedicated the past three decades to serving clients and helping make equine dreams come true. No other agency has sold more Grade 1 winners, more graded stakes winners, or more Breeders' Cup champions than TaylorMade. Visit us at the sales or online at TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what TaylorMade can do for you.
Led by founder Billy Koch, Little Red Feather has always been considered one of the most innovative racing partnerships in the industry. It was Koch who involved Tom Brady and LeBron James in ownership, someone with an infectious enthusiasm for the sport. Koch believes what he is selling is not a chance necessarily to hit the jackpot, but a guarantee that his partners will have a hell of a lot of fun. Welcome, Billy. And you made some news recently when it was announced that Little Red Feather had become the first syndicate to acquire a horse through crowdfunding, and it's a good horse, too. Let's listen in as Sistron breaks his maiden.
They come into the top of the lane now, and Sistron goes on. Sistron is the one to catch. He's opening up again. Sistron leads a length and a half. Cutter's racing gamely in second and coming to take them on the outside. Homeward bound now, and Sistron has hugged the rail and opened up to lead by two. Cut still looms the danger. Late run now from Ice Cat. Ice Cat is finishing strongly. Ice Cat extreme outside. Sistron holding on to the lead. Drifted in a little. Sistron gonna get there. Sistron went all the way. Sistron held on to win it. Ice Cat a tad unlucky second.
That was Sistron breaking his maiden. But before we talk about that, Billy, how did you and your team at Little Red Feather come up with the idea of using crowdfunding to attract owners and buy horses?
That's a great question, Bill, and thank you for having me on, by the way. The truth be told, it got popular a couple of years ago with the whole Kickstarter thing, and people were using it to raise money for their movies, and they were, or a record album. And I always wanted to have this. I had this notion that wouldn't it be great to go on the internet and just have a website called www.winthekentuckyderby.com. And, like, you could put in a dollar, and that was, like, this was years ago. I said, so much money, everybody could do it. And that was, when you go from partnership, and then all of a sudden, the SEC passed a law that you could actually do this crowdfunding with equity. That was the key. And once that happened, once that door opened, we took advantage of it, and we put it out there. And truth be told, Bill, we had no idea how popular it would be, how much money we would raise. We thought maybe we'd raise $100,000, maybe $150,000. And thankfully, we raised almost $300,000. And the minimum investment was $500. And it's like you said in your introduction, and by the way, I might steal that if you don't mind.
Okay.
It's a great way to get in the game and to have a, even if it's a little tiny piece of a horse, it's something that you can call your own and you can experience it. And our crowdfunders have been amazing so far. The emails have been unbelievable. People are so excited about it. Sistron, who you just, that was our first horse that we bought a minority share in with Costa Hronis, who is an unbelievable guy. I don't know if you've ever had him on your podcast, but he's loved the sport. And he and John Sadler were gracious enough to sell us a piece of the horse. It was a real sale. And the horse we think is going to run on Super Bowl Sunday at Santa Anita.
Okay. And what was the most that people had to spend to get involved into the ground floor?
The most was, or the least.
The least was
$500. The least was, okay, $500. And it was all through a company called Start Engine, so it wasn't your typical LRF partnership where we're calling people, people are calling us, we're getting them in on an individual horse. This was all done through the internet. It was all set up through Start Engine, who, we had an entire prospectus on there, and they literally went on and put their banking information. So we really had nothing to do with the fundraising other than putting together the package that was going out to the potential investors.
Okay. Now, you had to spend $500 to get in. What was the most anybody spent?
I believe that we have that was called a level one or a tier one investor. Then there's tier two, which is 2,500 to 10,000. And then there's tier three, which is 10,000 and up. I believe we have a few $10,000 investors in the fund.
Billy, what I've read is that you have enough money left over to buy at least one more horse after buying into Sistron. What kind of horse are you looking for? Anything in the hopper right now?
Well, we had a couple of opportunities, and right now nothing definitive, Bill, but we're looking for all kinds of horses. But we want the reason why we like Sistron was he's a young horse, obviously just turned three-year-old, bright future, already proven, stakes placed. We'd love to get involved with a Kentucky Derby type horse if we can. Obviously, don't know how affordable that could be. But horses that have something that they've already got going, they're already proven. It's hard with a group like this to buy, let's say, to go to a two-year-old sale and buy a two-year-old. They might not even make it to the races till they're three. So we really want something and a horse with people also like a Costa Hronis that love the game and understand what we're trying to do to bring people into the action. John Sadler, who's the trainer of Sistron, has been great. He's been giving me workout updates. And, you know, the last thing we want to do, Bill, is bug anybody. That's not our purpose. Our purpose is simply to show people a great ownership experience. And we think we're extremely fortunate to have Sistron, and we hope there'll be others.
Now, the coolest thing you could ever accomplish, and I know it would be very difficult to do, is get somebody in on a major three-year-old. So if you say you have about half the money left, you got roughly $150,000, I don't know about your expenses or whatever, $150,000 is going to buy about one jillionth of Classic Empire, and then your partners own one jillionth. But wouldn't it be fantastic for some guy to sit in a bar as that horse crosses the finish line and say to his friends, hey, I actually own a little piece of that horse. And I know that was something that you were really into. So how about that aspect of it? You know, be it John Oxley or Jerry Moss or anybody that owns a really good three-year-old, they would, you know, have to be good sports to let you in on this. But yeah, have you gotten anywhere on that? And is that still a goal?
It's absolutely a goal, and I couldn't have said it better myself. In fact, what you just said, I've talked to Jerry Moss about Gorham Lee. We have spoken about it. I don't know if it's going to happen. I'm waiting for B. Wayne Hughes to have a Derby prospect because Wayne really loved the idea. I don't know if Oxley will do it. You know, maybe even we put inquiries out to Windstar. I thought that colt that ran against Gorham Lee, American Anthem. Is that his name, Bill?
Yes.
I thought he was unbelievable the other day. So, yes, you're 100%. You know, it's kind of like the Packers, you know, the Green Bay Packers, right, and all their shareholders. We're trying to do a very similar thing, and I think you hit the nail on the head, Bill. It's exactly what we want to do, and if we can make it happen, we're going to. The thing is, we need people within the industry to kind of come together and say, you know what, I'd like to be a part of this. And that's what Costa did, and hopefully he'll set the tone for everybody else.
Now, with the horse you acquired, Sistron, this is a quality horse. It also happens to be a three-year-old, but looks like his future is on the turf after he ran third in the Eddie Logan. Is that? And I know you're not calling the shots here. John Sadler is, but from your understanding, is this a turf horse, and is that going to be his future?
Well, we're going to run him on the turf on Sunday, February 5th, which is Super Bowl Sunday. We're going to give him a shot in the allowance race, just a nice, you know, coming off that stake and just let him try to get his one of the van condition. But when I was talking to John and Costa about this horse, they think he's very multidimensional. They think he can go short, long, dirt, turf. You know, he's by the factor. So that was one of our exciting prospects that John did say, hey, we may try the dirt. So I wouldn't say he's just a turf horse at this point in his career.
Okay. Now, things like this, you have to be very ambitious. I'm sure there's a lot of involvement, paperwork, and various headaches. But you have gotten off to a good start. You seem very enthusiastic about this. Is this the first of many crowdfunding projects for Little Red Feather? Do you see yourself doing it again next year? And if so, maybe even in a bigger way?
As of right now, absolutely. We want to bring as many people as we can into the sport, Bill. That's always been my goal, always. Even when I first started syndicating horses, my goal was bring as many people as you can into the sport. So that is my goal. And if this thing is successful and people love it and we can raise more money next year and get more people involved, then absolutely, why not? The people have been great. I'll tell you what, Santa Anita's been amazing. Now that we know, because the condition book came out, that the horse is going to run on Super Bowl Sunday, knock on wood, hopefully everything goes okay. They have guaranteed every one of our crowdfunders and as many guests as they want, free admission passes, seats. So we could possibly have a huge crowd out there for this horse. We've even talked about doing a second winner circle, you know, after if we're lucky enough, again, I don't want to jinx it, but if we're lucky enough to win, Santa Anita said after the horse leaves and after the original winner circle picture, maybe we'll bring all the crowdfunders in to take a picture down there. So I think that would be amazing.
That would be fantastic. Do you have any idea how many people might show up?
You know, it's a great question and one we're going to find out really soon. I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
The more the merrier, though, right?
Sure, absolutely. Billy, just in general, and you kind of touched on this, and, you know, racing has a lot of problems. We know that, and, you know, we could talk all day about the various aspects of whether or not getting youth involved in racing, handle being down, drug issues, etc. But one obvious problem is that the game is having trouble attracting new owners. And if you could just speak to that, and obviously this is something that is very important to you, but how important is it to the future of this sport that we get more people involved from the ownership aspect?
It's vital. There are so many aspects to this game that are vital. And you have the owners, you have the racetracks, and you have the players. And unfortunately, our sport is fractured. And it's one of those things that people believe that their department, so to speak, or what they're doing is the most important, and it's not. We all have to work together to make this thing work. But as far as getting owners into the game, everybody knows that the financial aspects of this game don't make sense. Most owners lose money, and that's fact. That's period. You know, there's not. You can talk to 1,000 owners, and you're going to get the same answer. Most of them do this for fun, and in fact, even at Little Red Feather, we tell people that we. If you are going to invest in a horse, then do it for fun. Do not do this for the financial gain. And it's hard to tell people that, especially people in big business who have, you know, they've made their fortunes, started from scratch, and they, you know, it's hard to bring them into the game and they have a great time, but at the same time they're having this blast, but they're losing money. And it's a very difficult concept to grasp. Hopefully, this will change. I don't have the answer, but I love the game. I want to bring new people into this game, and hopefully we will be able to get there, and hopefully the crowdfunding is the start of that. You know, it's kind of like baby steps, right? Right, Bill? It's one guy who put in $500 and all of a sudden he's having the time of his life, and the next thing you know, he's out claiming horses, and the next thing you know, he's out going to 2-year-old sales, and the next thing you know, he becomes a big owner. That's how it has to happen. It's kind of a, I don't want to say minor league, but it's a way to start. And that's what the partnership model has been based on for all these years. That's what Cott Campbell started. And we tell people all the time, come into our partnership, Little Red Feather, join us, get some experience, get your feet wet. And then if you go and want to be an owner on your own, by all means, we'll help you.
Very good. Well, we'll talk more with Billy Koch about Little Red Feather's philosophies after this message from our friends at TaylorMade.
Family owned and operated since 1976, TaylorMade has dedicated the past 3 decades to serving clients and helping make equine dreams come true. No other agency has sold more Grade 1 winners, more graded stakes winners, or more Breeders' Cup champions than TaylorMade. Visit us at the sales or online at TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what TaylorMade can do for you.
7 seconds left on the 24-second clock. LeBron against the long arm to Reza. In trouble. Oh, my! Oh.
From behind the backboard. What a shot.
An incredible shot by LeBron James. I don't know how he even saw the basket, much less put the ball in the basket.
First and 10. Brady back to throw. Has protection. Gonna go long. He's open. He's got it. Touchdown. Tom Brady.
Well, Billy Koch, you've gotten a lot of celebrities to buy into Little Red Feather over the years, including two of the most famous athletes on the planet in LeBron James and Tom Brady. And how did you possibly get these two guys involved?
Sheer unadulterated luck. We had a really good friend. My sister was working for a company at the time with a guy named Jesse Itzler. And Jesse used to play in a poker game with some of these guys and became really good friends with them, with Brady and LeBron. So we said, we got to get these guys a horse. We got to get these guys a horse. We went to the sale and we bought a horse. And the poker game, you ever play that, Bill?
No, I have not, no.
Okay, it's called Guts. And so we named this filly Guts Game. She ran in New York. We had a great time. She actually won some races. She was trained by David Duggan, who I love, and great guy. And we had a blast. And you know, these guys are so busy and they're doing so many things. I would love to have them in again, but it's tough when you're dealing with especially those kind of celebrities who are at the absolute top of their games. I wish TV luck this weekend.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that because this was a wonderful coup that you got these guys, but they didn't stay in. And right now, I don't believe you have any major A-list athletes involved in Little Red Feather. It was just that it was just too much for them to be involved in this, too much else going on.
Yeah, it's funny. We had a lot of people involved at one point, and Avery Johnson tells a great story. And Avery, I think, is still involved with a lot of the stallion deals and stallion farms. Avery's a great guy. And one of our horses won one time, and he was in the locker room and going crazy. And all of his players, I think it was when he was coaching the Spurs, and they couldn't believe it. These guys are great to have because they're good ambassadors, and obviously they bring visualization for all the people out there. They bring such visibility. That was the word I was looking for people to see them. And it's great for racing, but at the same time, if they're not going to kind of stay in it and be involved, that's okay too. I mean, just to have them involved was fantastic for us. And it really helped our business grow, I think, that visibility. But, you know, we also, I think Jim Rome were responsible for him getting into the game. And Jimmy's a great guy and loves the sport. And he joined us for a while and then obviously went on his own. But it's great to have him. But at the same time, that's just one part of the growth that we need, Bill. We need the masses. We need more and more people to get involved.
Well, you mentioned Jim Rome, and he is one of the biggest names celebrity-wise in the game today. He got involved with Shared Belief, a terrific racehorse. When you get a guy like that involved and then he goes out on his own, is that a good thing for Little Red Feather? Not such a good thing? You know, how do you feel about Rome, you know, leaving the fold, so to speak, and going on his own?
I think it's a great thing. I think we did what we needed to do, and I'm really, really proud to bring a guy like Jimmy into the game. He and his wife, Janet, are amazing people. And they're so good for the sport. Everything, you know, he did the keynote address at the owners conference a couple years ago. And I'm proud. I'm proud of the success he has. I know that might sound crazy, but I'm absolutely, I think it's fantastic. I wish there were 10 more Jim Romes that could come into the game and really make an impact and really spread the word on what this game's all about and show that you can have success, because I think that's important too. And his success hopefully will rub off on somebody else, and he talks about it on his radio show. So all that stuff is a positive for the game. And for Little Red Feather, again, I think just there's a certain aspect of pride. Like, hey, we got this guy into the game. He had a great experience. Jim and I have a great relationship, and we move forward.
Well, you actually are an athlete as well, which people may not know. You played baseball at Northwestern, and you have an interesting claim to fame. Tell us about that.
Bill, why you got to bring that up? I had the Northwestern school record. I think it's been broken, but I was I had the most times hit by pitch in a single season. I was the guy who crowded the plate with two strikes, and I got hit a lot. I was not a scrapper, you know, Bill. I'm
what am I? I'm like 6 feet. Back in college, I was probably about 185. And so I had to do everything I could to get on base. And I wasn't ashamed to take one off the knee, off the shoulder, off the elbow. It didn't matter. I was getting on base any way I could.
Well, could you hit?
I hit sixth in the lineup, Bill. I was one of those guys that, like, I didn't have a lot of power. I think I hit 3 home runs my senior year. I hit about 300. So I was okay. I was a perfect six hitter. I could bunt. I could move guys over. You know, you never heard of that. A perfect six hitter.
Perfect six hitter. Okay.
Yeah.
One of your teammates was Mark Loretta, who had played briefly for the greatest franchise in the history of baseball, the Boston Red Sox. But the famous, most famous alumni of Northwestern baseball would be Joe Girardi. Now, I realize he was a little bit before your time, but when you were playing at Northwestern, was he already sort of a legendary figure on campus? Did you hear a lot of stories about him? Did people say, you know, this was a guy that you should really follow his example?
Absolutely. Joe was super popular back then, and he would come and speak at some of our banquets, and everybody looked up to Joe. Unbelievable guy. Such a, not only a good ball player, but turned into an unbelievable manager as well, obviously. And he, he's a good example for all of us. And unfortunately, I kind of knew I wasn't probably going that route. As a switch hitting, light hitting, 185-pound first baseman. So, definitely someone you look up to, and it's just so great to see a guy like Loretta have the career he had. Loretta was a very good friend of mine, and still is. In fact, we had lunch about 2 weeks ago down in San Diego, and Loretta's the best. Just a great guy and an unbelievable player. When you play with someone, and you look back and you see that guy, you just knew. Like, that guy is going to be a professional baseball player. And that was Mark Loretta. There was nothing that guy couldn't do on a baseball field. And he was so good. And sometimes you look in the mirror at yourself and you go, I don't think I'm going to be a baseball player. So it kind of, at the same time, it kind of sucked.
The stewardess said, both pilots.
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Doctor, I've checked everyone. Mr. Stryker's the only one.
What flying experience have you had?
Well, I flew single-engine fighters in the Air Force, but this plane has 4 engines. It's an entirely different kind of flying, altogether.
It's an entirely different kind of flying.
Well, those of you out there that are movie fans know what that's from. That's from Airplane. And one thing people may not know about Billy Koch was that movie was produced by, is it your grandfather or your father?
It's my grandfather, Howard W. Koch.
Howard W. Koch, your grandfather. So the question is, with that in your background, why didn't you decide to go into the movie industry?
You know, Bill, that's a great question. And I kind of did. I started, once I got out of Northwestern, I worked on a movie called Wayne's World, which my father produced. And I was the key set PA, and I worked alongside Dana and Mike, you know, Mike Myers and Dana Carvey. And had a blast doing it, but I liked the crew. I loved everybody, but I just didn't like the politics of Hollywood. I know that sounds funny. It just wasn't me. I loved going to the track. I loved those people and I loved the horses and that's where I felt like I was at home. And to go into the movie business, Bill, you probably know a little bit about Hollywood. I mean, look, like any business, it's tough, but it's a killer business. I mean, you really have to have it, whether you want to be a producer, director, writer, actor, whatever it is, you have to have such incredible moxie. And I believe, like, even in your introduction, that I am charismatic, I'll give myself that credit. I just wasn't cut out to be in the movie business. It just wasn't my style. And that's the truth. And once I started syndicating horses, and I realized that this could actually be a business and a way that, for my family to survive. And it was just, I just fell in love with it. And I'm blessed every single day. I'm standing outside. It's so beautiful right now at Santa Anita. I'm staring at the John Henry statue standing right outside the fountain. And I just realized how lucky, how fortunate I am to be doing what I'm doing. And that's the truth. I think I made the right decision.
But I understand it was your grandfather that introduced you to racing. Was he taking you to the track as a youngster?
Oh, yeah. My grandpa used to, we used to go to the track probably 2 times a week during the week, and once on the weekends, we'd always get dressed up. My grandfather was on the board of directors of Hollywood Park, and he loved all the people at the track, and he was a sweetheart of a man, and I just looked up to him, and he owned horses, and he owned horses with Telly Savalas, who was in Kojak, and then he owned with Aaron Spelling. That was a good buddy of his, because he kind of merged the Hollywood into the horse racing, which at that time was very, very popular. And I just got bit by the bug. I just loved it. I loved handicapping. I still handicap. But I always loved ownership. I loved the fact that you'd go down and it was your horse. And I loved the fact that it was your silks. And I loved all that. I just loved, I mean, rooting for our horses was like, that was it for me. I used to go around, my grandma and grandpa were fortunate to have a pool. And when I was a little kid, I used to listen to Jay Richards doing Horse and Jockey. And I would, while he would call the races, I had a whip. And I would run around the pool and kind of whip myself for which horse I was rooting for. So, yes, I was, at a young age, I was absolutely fascinated by this sport. And I still am. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that's really important, is that you keep learning and you keep trying different things, whether it's crowdfunding or pin hooking or, you know, ownership or just in the partnership or whatever it is, buying yearlings, buying two-year-olds. There's so much to this sport. And believe me when I tell you, I don't know everything. And I learn something new every single day. And I think that's what makes it really neat.
After this message from our friends at TaylorMade, we'll talk about the horse that put Little Red Feather on the map.
Family owned and operated since 1976, TaylorMade has dedicated the past 3 decades to serving clients and helping make equine dreams come true. No other agency has sold more Grade 1 winners, more graded stakes winners, or more Breeders' Cup champions than TaylorMade. Visit us at the sales or online at TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what TaylorMade can do for you.
Inside, nothing to lose with a swooping move on the far outside in Black Dune, and they're off to turn into the stretch. Here's Singletary. Singletary with a blitz to the lead. Singletary in front. On the outside, a late charge coming from Antonius Pius, coming down to the finish. Singletary to catch. Antonius Pius veers in, and just as he did, he lost chance to beat Singletary. Singletary wins it by a neck over Antonius Pius.
And that was Singletary winning the 2004 Breeders' Cup Mile. And Billy, am I right? Is that the horse that put you guys on the map? And from a business standpoint, what did he do for Little Red Feather?
No question, Bill. I got chills. I seriously running down my arms right now. That was one of the greatest days ever. And I credit Don Catlos, who was our trainer at the time. I had met Don. We had a couple horses with Ron Ellis. For a couple other syndicates that I had started. And then I said I wanted to start Little Red Feather, and I wanted Don to be the trainer. My very good friend Bruce Corwin and his son Dave, who I went to high school with and grammar school with, they loaned us some money to go buy some horses. Don went, and we had $100,000, and we bought 3 horses, and one of the horses he bought ended up being Singletary. And it was... I got to be honest with you, I didn't really know much what I was doing. I mean, I just went to some friends and some family and raised some money. And all of a sudden, in 2004, here we are at Lone Star Park, and we're 16-1. And there's a great story I like to tell. The day before the Breeders' Cup, they had turf workers, or not turf workers, but turf horses were allowed to kind of go on the turf course. And so I'm standing on this kind of backstretchy kind of awning thing overlooking the track, and I'm standing next to Dale Romans, who I didn't really know. And there were 3 horses circling, getting ready to go on the track, and it was Kitten's Joy, Ouija Board, and Singletary. And before all else, I'm a fan of this game, and hopefully you can hear that in my voice, Bill. I mean, Ouija Board and Kitten's Joy, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Here's Singletary right behind him, it's circling, ready to go on the track. And Dale Romans puts his arm around me. He goes, son, your horse looks the best of the 3. And I was and I was like, oh, my God. I said, Dale, thank you. But, you know, that's Kitten's Joy and Ouija Board. So let's be careful. So, you know, we were 16-1 that day. I happened to be sitting next in my box that day. Next to me was Brett Hall from the I think he was playing for the Blues at that time, maybe, or the Stars. I'm not sure. And And Brett Hull says, "Hey, you got any picks for me?" I said, "Well, we got a horse running." He said, "Oh, what horse?" And I said, "Well, his name's Singletary." "Oh, okay, I'm going to bet it." So, you know, I don't think of it. And anyway, the horse goes out and wins. We have one of the greatest celebrations of all time. We almost took down the balcony at Lone Star Park. It was unbelievable. It was really one of the greatest moments of my life, other than the birth of my children. And all of a sudden, I run into Brett Hull like an hour later, and he comes up and he grabs me and he picks me up. I said, "Wow, what'd you do?" He said, "I bet $1,000 on you."
Wow.
So he won like $16,000. He was like, "Hey, his pockets were going crazy." It was really funny. So I've never met so many people that bet on Singletary. I said, "How is this horse ever 16-1? Right. But anyway, it really did. It put us on the map. It gave us a name. It gave us a star. And we would not be here today without Don Chatlos and Singletary and Bruce Corwin and all those guys that made that happen. It's a day I'll never, ever forget, and we still talk about it. So there's no statute of limitations on that one.
Now, that's a horse that made $1.75 million, but you got him for $30,000. What did everybody else miss out about him? How did you find this diamond in the rough?
I really credit Don Chatlos. I wasn't even there when he bought him. He was in Florida, and he was going to farms to try to find horses. And there was a farm, and he saw like three or four horses that he was looking at, and they was in a field, and they were all kind of running. He tells the story that this one horse, which is ultimately Singletary, just was chasing all these other horses, and he never got tired, and he would keep chasing, and he'd keep chasing, and he'd keep chasing, and at the end of the day, he was the one that was always in front, and he was the one that was always in front. And that's what he says, and he was this kind of fat son of Sultry Song. Like, who wanted a fat son of Sultry Song? So I really do. I credit Don for what he was able to do for us, and Don's now working with Jerry Hollendorfer over at Los Alamitos, so I see him all the time, and we kind of laugh about it, and That was the way we did it. I mean, Bill, you know this for anything that you do in life. You need to have a little luck, and we did, thankfully.
Inside the quarter pole to the top of the stretch in Midnight Storm, yet to get serious, leads from Delmore about a half length and three lengths to accelerate, coming on well. Midnight Storm shaken up at the eighth pole, gets away a length and a quarter to Delmore. Accelerator still coming on, but Midnight Storm with a clear advantage at the 16th pole. Midnight Storm over Accelerator, who's finding the line well, but not well enough, and Midnight Storm has taken it by two lengths. Accelerate second.
Well, there's a new star in the Little Red Feather team. You own the very good horse, Midnight Storm, in partnership with Alex Veneri. And now that he has become a horse that's not just a grass horse, he's now winning on the dirt, what are the plans for him?
Keep him on the dirt and win a grade one.
Okay.
Very simple. We're pointing right now towards the Santa Anita Handicap. And that's a race that all of us, Alex and trainer Phil D'Amato and myself and my business partner Gary Fenton, it's right in our backyard. Again, I'm staring at the statue of John Henry, and I'm looking at Santa Anita right now. This is where I grew up, and it would be just such an honor to win a race like that, and that's what we're pointing for. He breezed last week, and he breezed just like he breezes every time. He's an absolute beast right now, Bill. And we are extremely fortunate to have a horse like this, and extremely thankful to Alex Veneri for, again, like Costa did. We bought a little bigger piece of Midnight Storm than we did Sistron, but it's the same kind of deal. You know, we saw an opportunity, and Alex was phenomenal in allowing us to come in and purchase a minority share. And we've got unbelievable partners in that horse. They just love this horse so much and what he's been able to do. And truthfully, credit Phil D'Amato, and I can't give him enough credit for kind of figuring this horse out at the beginning of his career. If you look at some of his races, he was kind of pulling and always rank and always, he was just like absolutely needed the lead, and he would just go as fast as he could for as long as he could. And if you watch his more recent races, he just relaxes now, and that makes him extraordinarily dangerous, as you know.
Well, how big are you dreaming with this horse?
I go Santa Anita Handicap, and then let's see. I mean, at the end of the year, I think the beauty of him is that we're going to have a lot of options. You have the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, you have the Breeders' Cup Classic, you have the Breeders' Cup Turf Mile, they just call it the mile, that he finished third in, beaten by Tourist and Tepin last year after, running ridiculous fractions while chasing What Have You. So he's so versatile that I think that we could pretty much do anything. But right now, from a value standpoint, we need to try to win a grade one on the dirt. That's really the most important thing. And to have for the big breeders in Kentucky, overseas, wherever, to have a grade one winner on turf because he won the Shoemaker Mile, and a grade one winner on dirt would be something really special and make this horse pretty valuable.
Now, Billy, I'm going to hit you with the toughest question of all. You're a guy who's very innovative. You love the game. We just had a new person enter the Oval Office. I'm going to make it you, the czar of horse racing. Today is your very first day. What's the very first thing you do? What's the one thing that you would say? I mean, again, this is a tough question because you can answer in a thousand different ways. Point to one thing. What are you going to do? What's the most important thing you could do as czar of racing to help the sport?
I think based on what I was talking about earlier, Bill, is I really would sit down with all the powers that be from the different factions, and I would actually come up with a designed plan of action for the future of our game. And that means handicappers, racetracks, ADWs, owners, trainers. I think we don't have that czar. I read an interesting article about the Atlanta Falcons when they brought in their new coach, and obviously they're in the championship game this weekend. And he and the GM sat down, and they literally said, "This is the kind of player we are looking for." And that's what they did, and they followed through with that plan. And I think in our game, there is no organization. I know the NTRA has tried, and TOBA's out there, and there are all these organizations, but I still feel that we are so fractured and that it is still a society in racing of what's in it for me. And I think until we change that attitude and say, okay, players, what do we need to do? Why isn't there an optimal takeout that is just across the board in every jurisdiction? Okay, trainers, we need to discuss the medication, because people are not going to play our game if they think that there are, you know, medication issues. Okay, owners, how do we make it financially viable for you? And I think so I can't give you one thing, Bill, because I think it's such a broad spectrum of issues. But I actually think having that czar might help. And I think someone needs to be in power. Someone needs to be a trustworthy adversary to all parties. And you know the old saying, you know, you can't make everybody happy. But I think in our game, everybody's just trying to make themselves happy rather than looking out for the good of the sport. And that's my issue.
Billy, I got to tell you something. What you just said made an awful lot of sense. Therefore, in horse racing, it has no chance of happening. I hate to be cynical, but usually...
No, it's okay. I know. But I wear rose-colored glasses, you know, and that's just who I am. And I love the sport so much. And all I can do is personally continue to work and try to bring new owners into the game, because that's my job. That's what I feel my job is. So as long as I'm doing my job and trying to help the sport and trying to get involved, I'm on the board of directors of TOBA. I'm on the board of directors of Karma for retired racehorses. We started our own charity called LRF Cares, which is for retired racehorses. So we're trying, and if that's all we can do, Bill, you know, and I know it's frustrating. I know when you hear those kind of things, but it's like the Pegasus, right? We have this monster race coming up and everyone just wants to bash it. And it's like, get behind something, guys. You know, Arrogate's going to work in about 20 minutes. You think I'm not going to go watch that work? I'm excited. Like, I can't wait to see these two horses go at it again, him and Chrome.
Well, your enthusiasm is tremendous, and I think you're definitely onto something with the crowdfunding. Let's hope that it's a major success and something that you could build on. Billy Koch, thanks for your time, and thanks to TaylorMade for sponsoring this week's Thoroughbred Daily News Contest. We'll see Billy Koch and Little Red Feather in the winner's circle.